If you want to follow along in our Bible reading this morning, I invite you to turn to Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 through 31. That's found on page 2 if you're using a Bible in the bench in front of you. If you brought your own, it's just right at the beginning of the Bible. Genesis, first book of the Bible, chapter 1. We're going to read verses 26 through 31. This is about creation of humankind, men and women. And we're talking about our topic this morning is one that I imagine if someone would have preached a title like this 20 years ago, people would have thought that's kind of boring and obvious. But we live in a world today where this is a challenge now, and so we're going to talk about this together. Genesis 1, 26 through 31, "Then God said, 'Let us make man in our own image, in our likeness, and let him rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground.'" So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground." Then God said, "I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth, and every tree that has fruit with seed in it, they will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth, and the birds of the air, and all the creatures that move along the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food." And it was so. God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. This is God's word. At the beginning of the year, we started exploring a sermon series with three topics. These are three topics that the Bible talks a lot about. They're three topics that are therefore crucial to Christian faith and life. And these are three topics where we find ourselves at odds with the culture around us. The three topics are power, money, and sexuality. We've talked about power and we've talked about money, and this morning we're starting to talk about the third topic, human sexuality. Power is the ability to make something of the world, and we even referred to this same passage when we talked about power, because here God tells us that part of being human is to develop and shape and create things in this world. We're created to oversee this world in a stewardly way, in a caring way. We're part of God's, we're God's vice regents. We're part of God's way of taking care of his planet that he created. And so that's our abilities, our powers that he has bestowed on humankind. Jesus Christ, of course, accomplished the greatest feat in history, the greatest feat in all the universe, saving us from our sin. And he did this by giving up power. And so to have a Christian understanding of this is both to acknowledge the created dignity and way that God made us to influence, to make something of the world around us, but also that we tend to use power in selfish, destructive, self-exalting, God-diminishing ways. As we talked about this, about power, then, of course, one of the most powerful things in our lives today is money. Money has all kinds of influence, especially among people that think that they can solve all of their problems with physical means, physical resources. Whatever money can buy, that's what can ultimately solve our challenges in our world. But as Christians, we know better. Our world's vision of the good life is seductive. And we know better. So we talked about using our money, not letting money use us. Or to put it another way, our money serves us in loving God and loving our neighbor. We don't be a slave. We're not a slave to our money. And this can only happen when Christ becomes our treasure more and more. And so the third topic this morning is human sexuality. It's a daunting topic to address for most of us. It's an area many of us feel our culture is really pressing in on us, and it's been happening for 50 plus years. Since the 1960s and the so-called sexual revolution, the church and culture have been at a battle over matters of human sexuality. And this morning we're talking about the English word sex in terms of male and female. When I used to take the Iowa test of basic skills, it was one of those things where you had to fill in these little ovals. There was a box, you know, for your name and box for your grade, and there was a box and it was called sex, and I had to fill either the male or female oval. And today there are people that are wondering if we shouldn't just have two ovals. There are people today that are thinking the next step in human evolution is to transcend our human sexuality of being male and female. So we're going to talk about that this morning. In talking about topics like this, I'm going to take a note from Mr. Rogers. I'm not sure, some of you probably watched a little bit of Mr. Rogers growing up. I love Fred Rogers. He's kind of a children's hero in my mind. He was a Presbyterian pastor at one point, and he decided to give his life to developmental psychology and then hosting television program. And he would say this about difficult topics like this. He would tell kids, and I'm talking to kids now, some things we talk about are really adult things. Adults have to worry about these things. But it's all right for you to wonder about them, and it's all right for you to ask questions about them of your parents or of your pastor. And if your parents want help with questions, they can talk to their pastor. And we're going to talk about things that are sometimes adult topics and sometimes you will be curious about, and that's all right. We don't want anyone to be ashamed of thinking about or wondering about things that our world is forcing down our throats. So I hope that you'll have that spirit and that attitude towards human sexuality. We're going to start with creation because that's where the Bible starts, and I want to begin by asking, what's the relationship to the gospel, what we proclaim as the good news, and creation, God creating the world? My angst in so many evangelical-minded churches is that the message you hear about is sin and salvation, sin and salvation, sin and salvation, and we forget that that doesn't mean anything unless it's inside the bigger story of creation and new creation. We don't know what sin is unless we know that God created the world and us to operate a certain way, and sin is violating that. Sin is undermining the way we're made. We sin against ourselves, we sin against each other, and we sin against God by not living out how God has made us to be. And of course, sin is a destructive, terrible thing in our lives. It's something that we need rescued from. We need to rejoice and glorify and magnify Christ for saving us, but don't forget the bigger story. Because when you forget the bigger story, you don't have the theological or the philosophical or any resources to address topics like human sexuality. This is not something that's just a sin and we need to be saved from it. This is something that God created. He created good, and it's become broken. And so many scenarios we need to learn and relearn to think through in terms of a good thing that has become broken. God created us. We fell into sin. Christ redeems us, and that redemption is aimed at a new creation. And so salvation is partly a restoration project, restoring us to how God created us to be, but also it's aiming us towards an even greater future than the Garden of Eden was. Even better. new creation where heaven and earth will join together. This past Thursday, we celebrated the Ascension Day. And this was the day that we remember Christ ascended into heaven. And Jesus, what he did in his redemption is he became creation. He became one of us. He entered the world that he made and he transcends. And he took on human flesh. He suffered a human death. And he rose again. God rose him again from the dead and gave him a new creation body. A body that's not going to get sick. A body that's not going to get hurt. A body that is more glorious. A body that can't be threatened by the things that our bodies are threatened with in this world. And what Jesus did is he took that first fruit of new creation and he placed it in before God's presence on his throne room. We have part of humanity, part of new creation in God's presence right now. Jesus represents our humanity in the presence of our Heavenly Father until he brings heaven down to earth when he comes again and restores everything. That's the big picture storyline. Now, in creation, we read here in Genesis 1 that God created human beings in his image. The image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. God's image and our maleness and femaleness are very closely related. There's a purpose, there's a reason. Your boys and your girls, you are men and you are women, and that's a good thing. That's part of God's good creation. It's not something that limits us in a way that we need to throw off, as the world tells us, that limitations of being a boy or being a girl are something that you need to get beyond or move beyond, that we need to transcend these things. This is God's good gift to us. And we celebrate this good gift. And we enjoy being boys and being girls and being men and being women as part of God's good creation. But there are things about being boys and being girls and being men and being women that are broken. None of us live maleness and femaleness out in a perfect, unsin-stained way. We all are fallen and we all need Jesus. We're all sinful and we're all broken beings. We need Jesus Christ to renew our hearts. And part of that, I believe, helps us restore what it means to be a man and be a woman, especially in relationships with each other, especially in marriage relationships or the way we relate to the opposite sex. It's really, really important that we not play the power games and try to manipulate each other, as our world so often does. Our destiny is to have an embodied existence on a new earth. And one thing the Bible doesn't tell us is how our maleness and femaleness will play itself out there. But it never tells us that it goes away. We are created and we will be recreated, resurrected someday, the men and women that we are. It's part of God's gospel creation story that runs through the narrative of the Bible. We have a human nature, and human nature is to make something of the world, to develop it and unfold it. And we together as men and women share in God's image. There's been some really bizarre movements in history to think that men really have God's image and women have a lesser image. There's nothing biblical about that idea, even though it was taken and blessed by Christianity at one point. It's false. It's not the way God revealed things to us. He gives men and women equal dignity, equal image-bearing worth. They're partners in making things of this world together, and they have different roles in marriage and family. That's true. You can't deny women can bear children. Men's bodies physiologically are are designed better for harder labor, but that doesn't mean that we have these very structured, clear, distinct ways. Men can only do this, women can only do that, as far as together making something of the world. And so we bear God's image. We have equal dignity and worth and value before God. When a man and a woman come together and become married, they're united then for a lifelong partnership of living out God's call together. And they're joined together. So it's really important to see that brokenness in human sexuality is taking something that's good, that was created good by God, and has become tainted by the fall and tainted by sin. And at this point, I think it's really hard to know, and we can't know for sure, why some people have this problem and some people have that problem. Why are some people's bodies broken and that they have a disease that's incurable? Why is one person struggling with their boyness or their girlness or their maleness or their femaleness? Why is one person bearing this kind of burden, another person bearing that kind of burden? We don't know the answers to those questions. We know that all of it is related to the fall into sin. But we don't say that because you have this heart condition, you must have sinned, or because you have this psychological challenge you deal with, it must be your own fault all the time. We just know that people are broken and that brokenness is due to sin. So I want to talk about this gospel compared to some other gospels, mainly the gospel of transhumanism. I'm not sure if you've heard that word before, but this is the idea that's popular in our world today, that we ought to try to transcend the limits of human existence. We're these kind of beings on this earth, and our destiny is to make ourselves as great as we can make ourselves. And if someday that we could see better than we can see with our own eyes, we should replace our eyes with something that would even be better. And if our minds could calculate even faster than they can, we should implant chips into our head and make ourselves even greater. We should transcend our humanity, because there really is no human nature, they believe. We're just evolved animals that are always evolving ourselves. Just 2 months ago, a video on YouTube went viral of a man who has been paralyzed for life, who had an interface in his brain that was controlling an arm that was controlling his hand. And he lifted his hand up and grabbed a coffee mug, and he drank something with it, controlled by his mind through a computer, animating machines plugged onto his arm. Now, this is the gospel of transhumanism. This is what we can do. This is what we can accomplish. Someone who's paralyzed, we can interface with your brain through a computer, and we can give you abilities. We can let you walk again. And these are the, I'd say, good gifts of technology if God gives them to us. But this is the mindset, the mentality that we ought to keep advancing ourselves. And this is really salvation. This is what really makes us fulfilled in life. This is what really advances human nature and human existence. Elon Musk, who is kind of the superstar of inventions and technological development of our age, he invented PayPal, Tesla Motors, SpaceX. He has declared this past month his next project is brain-computer interface. He wants us to be able to talk to our phones by thinking. Just looking at your smartphone and looking it up in your head, and it calls. He wants to transcend our fingers, our toes. He thinks that's the future of humanity. If you think that sounds like a science fiction movie, you're right. But I think in 20 years that might be the world that we're trying to figure out how we're going to live in now. I think transgenderism is a dimension of transhumanism. It's trying to get beyond how we were created as creatures, to no longer honor our limits, but say that we can define ourselves however we want, we can do what we want, we can have whatever capabilities we want. Transgenderism is the culmination, or maybe it's a step along the way, of relativism, of there's no truth, there's no reality, it's whatever you make of it. This world is whatever you make of it, and that's all. There's nothing that's clear, there's nothing that's defined. So if you are a boy and you want to be a girl, you can be a girl. And if you're a girl and you want to be a boy, you can be a boy. That's the gospel of transgenderism, that you don't have to embrace your createdness. You can make it whatever you want, and it's to make the self sovereign. You get to determine everything about your future. Doesn't all of that sound so great and so seductive? That's the alternative gospel that our world is preaching, and it seems pretty powerful. And the question we need to ask ourselves as Christians is, how do we respond? Are we going to buy in to the ever-advancing capabilities of humanity? Are we going to say that our worth and our dignity is what we can do and accomplish, and then any means will justify accomplishing more? Or are we going to go back to say, we are creatures who were made by God, a creator, and we need to start there as we discern the bizarre future that's ahead of us, if Christ shall tarry longer. There's a difference between biological sex, male and femaleness, and what our social scientists call gender, how you understand that, how you're socialized into that. Now, these are two things that you can distinguish them, but you can never separate them. Our world wants to separate them. Our world wants to say what you are biologically doesn't have to be what you want to be socially. And therefore, we have bathroom law debates, and we have all kinds of things going on in our culture. To completely separate them is to just ignore reality. It might sound harsh, but let me give you an illustration. Okay, we all drive cars, right? We have vehicles. Our vehicles physically are to give us transportation, right? They get us from one place to another. But vehicles can also be a status symbol. Our car can communicate something about us. If we like to be fast, we might have a sporty car. If we have a lot of money, we might drive around a Benz or something like that, a Mercedes. Just because your car can be a status symbol doesn't mean it ceases to be a way of transportation. Just because we can do a lot of socialization and we can put a lot of baggage on what it means to be engendered beings doesn't mean that our biology doesn't matter. It's the same reality. So sex and gender are distinguished but not separated. Gender socialization is how we bring up boys to be boys and girls to be girls. And we don't always do this well either. It's not true that a girl has to hate blue and a boy has to hate pink, right? We've kind of created that in our culture. And now if you're a boy and you kind of like pink, then you're weird and you don't fit in with the boy stereotypes. These are so unbiblical, so cultural baggage that we have today that are even confusing people more than what's required. One gender stereotype: boys play with trucks, girls play with dolls. Well, then they invented dolls for boys. They call them action figures. They invented cars for girls. They had little Barbie cars, and they're driving around. But maybe you've heard this. You know, he's such a boy. He loves his trucks and stuff. Well, what would they have done 200 years ago when they didn't have trucks and toy trucks? They were such a boy in a different way, right? Our stereotypes are so culturally embedded and so unbiblical that we really need to make sure that our stereotypes don't interfere with our just clear ability to be men and women and boys and girls. I have a really deep sense of this because I had a young person in my youth group. He was a young man, and he loved art, and he loved music, and he loved growing flowers. And the guys made fun of him to no end. And the only way he decided he could cope was to become gay. I've seen what gender stereotypes do to ruin people. Don't buy the cultural's package. Because what the culture does is it says, if you don't fit this stereotype, then you can be in this transgender club. Then that's who you are. And that's not helpful at all. It's funny how the feminist movement said we got to get rid of these stereotypes, and now they're using them to justify these kind of new sexual conditions and states of people. It's undermining their own argument. People who have struggle with their gender identity. I see it in the same kind of continuum as other struggles with their physical body. There are people who have body identity integrity disorder. People that don't feel like they fit in their body, the body that they have. There are people who say, this isn't my arm. I want it cut off. Now, what do we do ethically with that? These are people that are broken. They're hurting. And there's something about their mind and their body that doesn't work well. Paul McHugh wrote a well-known article several years ago about why Johns Hopkins Hospital stopped doing gender reassignment surgeries. They did them and people didn't feel better about themselves. So they stopped. It wasn't the psychological golden key, perfect solution that everyone claims it is. People go through these things, they mutilate their bodies, and they still feel like they don't fit in the world. That is not the answer. And I don't think it's unloving to suggest that's not the answer. I think it's loving to say, there's got to be another way of coping and dealing with this. Not to celebrate brokenness, but to be compassionate with brokenness. Ethically, there's all kinds of challenges in this world, but I want to conclude by asking, how do we respond like Jesus responds? What Jesus did was when someone was in pain, when someone was hurting and broken, he showed compassion every time. Look at all four Gospels. When someone was broken by their sin, they knew they weren't right and it was hurting them. Jesus showed compassion and kindness. He connected with them at a human level. He showed care. And out of that relationship of care, he spoke words of truth, of grace, of healing. Jesus also could tell when people were just sinning and they were arrogant and proud about it. And he confronted them. He called them names. He just went right after them and absolute confrontation. Now, we don't know. You and I don't know exactly when someone always is hurting and broken, or when someone is just arrogant and proud about their sin. So we need to get to know people that we would care for and try to discern this. There are times when we need to show compassion to people that are hurting, and there are some times we need to confront with clear logical arguments, with our convictions, when we disagree with others about matters of human sexuality. I just hope and I pray that we would have the right spirit to do this. That when people are broken and when someone you know is wrestling with something about their gender, about who they are as a male or a female created by God, and they're hurting and broken, that we would show compassion and befriend them, not alienate them. Be kind to them and not make fun of them. But also when people are using these things to just get more attention for themselves, and that's happening a lot today too. This is the in thing. This is the cool thing to be beyond gender, that we'd be willing to confront with clarity and love and care, but stand our ground and say, no, this is what I believe. Memorial Day weekend, we celebrate the fact that men and women died so we would have freedom to have these kind of conversations. I've said this as well, and I will close with this, to someone in our community that I've had this debate with personally, is that 20 years ago, you wanted freedom to disagree. And we said, okay, we'll have a discussion, we'll investigate, we'll dialogue about this. Now you don't want us to have the freedom to disagree. People in the transgender movement don't want to give us freedom to disagree with them. I asked them, please give us the same courtesy that we gave you in having this discussion in our nation. If you are in pain about who you are as a man or a woman or a boy and a girl, I promise to be compassionate. And if you want more help in how to confront things, we will talk and we will work through this together in the days and weeks ahead. Well, let's pray together.